Well, let's hear what our esteemed professor, Syed Mohammed Mirandi, the Professor of English Literature and Orientalism at the University of Tehran, thinks of this. Professor, thanks for joining us again. Now, I stress, as I always do, you don't speak for the government of Iran, neither can we expect you to know everything that's happening inside the government of Iran. But there's a very clear dichotomy, and that is that either Trump is desperate to get this over with and is prepared to give peace a chance, or, as our poll suggests, he intends to return to the face of the war, and that your people, therefore, will be facing very difficult times indeed, as will the entire world. Which of these two possibilities do you think is the more likely?
Well, thank you very much for having me, George. It's interesting, right before your program, I was on with Piers Morgan again. And as usual, he calls me the spokesperson or the mouthpiece of the regime, as he loves to call it. And I don't know if he thinks he's insulting me or flattering me. But unfortunately, no one has ever offered me that position in Iran. So maybe he could put a good word in for me somewhere. I think the real question, George, for me, is that Trump has, until up to now, said he's going to obliterate Iran. He said he's going to send Iran back to the Stone Age. He said he's going to wipe out the Iranian civilization. And now he says this. There, in Western media, we haven't seen any outrage in the UK, in the US. We haven't seen bold headlines condemning him for this. And we haven't seen a single major journalist, these journalists that have millions of followers or hundreds of thousands of followers, who knows how many of them are real or not, but none of them have shown outrage, not before and not now. It's normal to say, but if you heard to say this about Iran, but if someone in Iran, let's say some obscure MP from some far off city in Iran that I've never even heard of, comes out and says, we will wipe the French people from the face of the earth, or we will wipe the French people. Imagine the outrage or the response of Western media, which we often see. Some person who is not even in charge, they quote him and then they attribute things to him, or they misquote him or they distort what he says. We've seen that a lot, how they would twist the wording and then make what the president or some former president had to say. But here, Trump, an English speaker, not the greatest of English speakers, but he has said the same thing in different ways so many times that it's clear as day what he's threatening to do. He's threatening to carry out the most horrific Holocaust in human history by far. And even if he doesn't choose to carry this out, this is itself terrorism. You're being threatened, your entire family, your neighbors, your neighborhood, your city is being threatened to be demolished. But complete indifference in the West. We also saw this earlier when he spoke about Cuba. And we should never forget what's going on in Cuba either. The Cuban people are besieged and they're being terrorized, and Trump has threatened in the past to destroy Cuba. But again, no outrage, nothing in the so-called civilized world. So they've demonized us so much in the Western media. They've depicted us as subhuman for so long that it doesn't bother any of these elites. I know that it outrages many, many decent people in the UK and in the US and across the world and across the West, but among the elites, the Epstein class, it's not even something that deserves to be discussed, apparently.
Well, of course, you make the point that he doesn't speak English very well. That's definitely a problem. But that he speaks entirely contradictory English is more of a problem. It's not actually possible, not being a psychiatrist, to decipher one Donald Trump from another, and there are many, multiple Donald Trumps. So on the principle that, in the words of a very good friend of mine, once at the top of the tree in British political journalism, half of all political news is entirely made up, entirely invented. And then much of the other half is exaggerated, distorted, half-truthed, and all the rest. But the half of it is literally made up. Did Barak Ravid of Axios, for the seventh time this morning, make up the story that a peace deal between the U.S. and Iran was, in his words, imminent?
Yes, it was completely fabricated. And it is believed here that this was to manipulate the markets. And by manipulating the markets, people around Trump and around Witkoff, and probably Kushner too, have made most probably a huge amount of money today. But there is no truth to it. Of course, there are other reasons to manipulate the markets. If they can keep the price of oil, paper oil, down, at least, it serves a psychological purpose, even though you know better than I that oil is not being sold on the spot market in prices anything that are similar to $100. It's roughly $150, $140 per barrel of oil. Sometimes it goes even much higher. But this is all in order to keep people quiet, to have to prevent panic. But at the same time, a lot of people are making a lot of money. I've heard that there's evidence that, again, people have been making, have been moving money around, were moving money around right before the announcement by Axios. And Axios in general, George, you know this, and I'm sorry for saying this because I know your audience knows these things better than I too, but Axios is just Witkoff's psychological warfare tool. And I never take it seriously, and I don't think anyone else should.
Well, there's paper oil, and there's also paper blockades. And it seems to me, and I've been following it with very great attention, as you'd expect, that Iran is now in complete control of the Straits of Hormuz. However many blockades are announced, however many times it's said to be blockaded, however many times even the British government pretends that it sent non-existent warships to the region, the truth is Iran commands the Straits of Hormuz like a colossus and greater control than ever exercised before. And therefore, there must come a limit, even for the fools in the stock market, in those who fall for this Axios set of fictions. Iran has the straits. It's not actually going to walk away from that control, is it?
No, George, it's Iranian territorial water. These are not international waters. This is a myth that Western media likes to create. In fact, Western journalists sometimes contact me, legacy media journalists, of course, and express outrage that this is against international law. And first, I tell them, well, I think the war was against international law. The Iranians were minding their own business, and so your outrage about the Strait of Hormuz really doesn't mean too much to me. But I also then tell them that this is not these are not international waters. This is the territorial water that exists between Iran and Oman. And Iran has not signed up to any international agreement which would deny it the right to control those waters. But there's no doubt, that, in my mind at least, that the United States has been failing from the beginning. At the beginning of the 12-day war last year, Trump demanded unconditional surrender. They failed. They lost the war. The Israeli regime couldn't even keep fighting for more than 12 days. They were begging for a ceasefire after 8 or 9 days. Then the Americans decided, the Trump regime decided to come in, far more powerful than the Israeli regime with all of its American weapons. And at the beginning, he demanded unconditional surrender again. After 39 days, Trump accepted the Iranian 10-point plan for peace as the framework for negotiations. So he lost the war. That's the second war that he lost. Then after that, with the ceasefire that he and Netanyahu broke, which if the ceasefire had been carried out, right now the global economic crisis would not be nearly as bad as what it is. But because Netanyahu refrained from carrying out the ceasefire, and then Trump sided with Netanyahu, even though the Pakistani government said very clearly that Lebanon was a part of the ceasefire, the Strait of Hormuz remained closed for much of the shipping that is supposed to go through it. And I should point out, by the way, that the Strait of Hormuz has never been closed. It was only closed to ships that belonged to the five countries that assisted the United States in carrying out its assault on the Iranian people: Kuwait, the Emirates, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and Bahrain. So Netanyahu prevented the deal from being implemented, and then Trump imposed a siege. So if Trump did not impose a siege on Iranian ports, we wouldn't be where we are today. But even there, he failed, because Trump said, okay, I'm imposed a starve, and they thought they were starving the Iranian people, gloating that Iranian people were starving. They're not starving, but you know, that was their hope, and it just shows how inhumane the Epstein class is. But okay, if they're succeeding, then why did they have to carry out this operation the day before yesterday? All they had to do was sit back and relax and wait for Iran to crumble. It was because the siege was failing to, instead of bringing the Iranians to a point of collapse, they're bringing the global economy to the point of collapse. And so Trump, in his desperation, carried out this operation, hoping that the Iranians could allow him to let these tankers through, and the Iranians didn't. So again, he failed. So the First World War failed. The Second War failed. The siege failed. This operation failed. And now we're waiting for Trump to most probably carry out an assault on Iran. Not another war, because the war is not over. After the 39 days of aggression, the siege on Iran, which is an act of war, this would be a continuation of the Ramadan. But in any case, we are waiting for an assault. It's not for certain, but it is widely believed here that the threat of an assault on Iran is quite high as we speak. And no one should take anything that Trump says about peace agreements or anything like that seriously.
And were that, God forbid, to happen, what would the Iranian response be?
Oh, it would be decisive, George. The Iranians would hit back very hard. And I think that by now the Americans should have learned their lesson. They have always miscalculated when it comes to the Islamic Republic of Iran and the axis of resistance. The people of Iran, the people of the axis of resistance are extraordinary. Their resilience, their resistance is unbelievable. Look at Lebanon today, George. The ISIS and Al-Qaeda people who they brought to power, who also insulted the churches in Syria. These same, just like the Zionist regime does when it takes churches in Lebanon and insults Saint Mary, who for us, one of the chapters of the Quran is named after Saint Mary. Jesus to Muslims is to Shias in particular, he's infallible. He's one of the prophets alongside Prophet Muhammad and Abraham and Moses as an infallible prophet. So constantly insulting, I mean, the two are the same, the ISIS and Al-Qaeda and the Zionist enemy. But Hezbollah and the resistance and its supporters, which are Christian, and Druze, and Muslim, and Shia, and Sunni, the resistance, despite being surrounded by these sinister forces, look at their resilience today. Look at how badly the Israeli regime is being punished by the resistance. And every time an successful operation is carried out, in their rage, they go and bomb civilians. They go and bomb families. They murder entire extended families out of rage and spite. So the resistance, whether in Lebanon or in Yemen or in Gaza or in Iran or in Iraq, is extraordinary. And the resilience of the people is something that I think is beyond the comprehension of the likes of Trump. So if they attack, Iran will hit back hard. And in my belief, George, we are heading for a deep recession as it is. And if this continues for much longer, it's going to be a depression. But if there is war, then I think there will be a very deep depression. Because especially, I mean, there are two types of war. One is if Trump carries out a short war, and the other is a long war. A short war is very dangerous in the sense that once Iran starts striking back, Trump will, in his arrogance and because of his ego, will demand more strikes against Iran. So a short war can end up in a long war again, which could last for weeks. So let's imagine that we do have a war that lasts a while. More infrastructure will be destroyed. If critical infrastructure is destroyed, then Iran will strike Zionist critical infrastructure, but also the critical infrastructure of these regimes in the region that host U.S. forces. We are in the month of May, and in two or three weeks, it is going to become very hot in the Persian Gulf and in the Arabian Peninsula. Just like in Russia, they have general winter here. The Iranians have general summer, I suppose. It will be very difficult for the Americans to fight under such circumstances. And if critical infrastructure, which they threaten to strike, can destroy in Iran, meaning electrical power plants, well, if they do that, then Iran will have to do the same. And if that happens, these regimes will become impossible to live in, not only for people, ordinary people, but also American soldiers, the aggressors. So I don't think this is going to end well at all for the United States. It's not going to end well for these family dictatorships that are complicit in war. But again, it's Trump, and the Trump regime is obedient to Zionism. And the Zionists don't care about the American people or the global economy. They don't care about the Indian economy or the Ugandan economy or the economy of Argentina or the EU. They care about Zionism. They don't care about the American people. So Kushner and Witkoff, their allegiances are clear. And Netanyahu and Trump are more than willing to sacrifice the world for the sake of this ethno-supremacist and genocidal regime. So although it sounds crazy, but it is quite possible that war could be, the United States could restart the war, and it could lead to the complete devastation of all oil and gas assets and electrical power plants in the Persian Gulf region. And that would mean that there would be no more oil or gas or anything else for years from this region. And that, I think, would mean that we would live in a very, very different world in the months ahead, God forbid.
Now, finally, as a professor, distinguished professor of English literature, I know that you'll be familiar with the work of my countryman, Arthur Conan Doyle, the author of the Sherlock Holmes series, of which I'm a very great fan. You'll recall, therefore, his aphorism about the dog that didn't bark or the shoe that didn't drop. I'm wondering about Yemen, which is, as I look at this, so far, the dog that didn't bark or the shoe that didn't drop. Is there a reason why Yemen has not yet become involved in a big way in this confrontation? If they do become involved, what would be the consequences of their involvement?
Well, just as a small footnote, I'm a big fan of his work and of Sherlock Holmes. But interestingly, he wasn't a big fan of his own stories on Sherlock Holmes, and he wanted to get rid of Sherlock Holmes. But ironically, that he's known for Sherlock Holmes. Yemen, George, I think the best way to put it is that everything depends on the escalation ladder. Iran, the axis of resistance, did not start this war. And every time we saw escalation, it began with Trump and Netanyahu, not the Iranians, not the Iraqis, not Yemen. So it depends on how far up the escalation ladder the American Trump goes and Netanyahu goes. If it goes, the higher it goes, the more engaged the axis of resistance will become. And the same is true with Iraq. Iraqis can do much more, the resistance, than they did. But it was decided to have a managed escalation. The same is true with Iran. If I'm sure your audience remembers, during the last day of the war, the 39-day war, the Ramadan war, the Iranians hit exceptionally hard. And or also on another occasion when the Epstein coalition bombed Iran's South Pars gas field, the Iranians immediately struck back very hard and destroyed key elements of Qatar's gas installations. And that caused Trump to put out a Truth Social tweet saying this won't happen again. So it depends on what the United States wants. Iran does not want a global economic crisis. Iran does not want war. We are not warmongers, unlike the United States and the Israeli regime. But we will not appease the enemy. Iran is not like those countries that when Trump threatens them with trade warfare, they back down and accept the U.S. demands on tariffs and so on. Iran is not going to appease Trump. Iran will be steadfast, and it will hit back hard and make sure that Trump regrets what he did. How do we know that? Because Trump accepted Iran's 10-point plan during the last day of the war. That was a humiliation for Trump. And many people attacked him for that. And that's why his spokeswoman afterwards said that, no, we threw it into the bin, the Iranian 10-point plan. But it was clear. He accepted it. He tweeted. He posted it. So everything depends on the United States. Iran does not want war. Before this war started, people were doing business. Iran wasn't even controlling the Strait of Hormuz. The biggest mistake that Netanyahu has made, and the same is true with Trump, is launching this war. They have pushed Iran to taking control of the Strait of Hormuz, which will remain in Iran's hands from now on. Any of these fanatical Zionists should be outraged that Netanyahu's own war and his own warmongering has led to the shift in the balance of power away from the Israeli regime, away from the United States, and to the benefit of the global majority, the axis of resistance, and of course, Iran. And just one final point, George. The world is sick and tired of the Israeli regime. Not only have they seen 2.5 years of genocide, but now they're seeing that the well-being of people across the world is being threatened by this monstrous regime and the Trump regime. I've been speaking to a number of Indian reporters separately. They didn't come to Iran together. But by coincidence, I met them within 2 days, a number of them in Tehran. And there they're saying that in India, which you know is the government has had a bad track record when it comes to Palestine and the Palestinian cause and the genocide, these journalists who come from different political backgrounds and different media outlets have been telling me that the mood in India has changed and it has turned against the Israeli regime for the most part and against Trump. So when they lose India, you can imagine how bad things are across the world.
Amen. Professor Marandi, as always, go safely. You are in the eyes of all of us here at the Mother of All Talk Shows. God bless you and keep you.